Bonjour, everybody. Buonasera at this point, and welcome to the last session of the conference. We made it. Not yet, actually. We still have a good 74 minutes and 38, 37, 36. My name is Vittorio Bertocci, and I'm a principal architect evangelist in Redmond, as you can hear from my accent, classic North America. No, yeah, I'm actually Italian, but I've spent almost 6 years there in the States. And in fact, my pregnancy goes forward. And this is the third session of the day after 1 week in which I gave sessions all over the place. And I'm also a bit jet-lagged. Plus, I'm not very brilliant to begin with. So this session is probably not going to be the most exciting thing that you have ever seen. But I owe it to you guys to push as hard as I can. The topic today is going to be how to develop software as a service solutions on the Windows Azure platform. How many of you guys ever developed on Windows Azure? Oh, wow, that's a very good percentage. It helps that there's not a lot of us. And any of you care to give a definition of a software as a service? Yes, sir. It's a what, I'm sorry? Okay, that's a good example of a software as a service solution. So if we generalize from that model, a software as a service solution is, to make things a bit trivial, basically the functionality and capability that you deliver by just telling to your customer a URL. The customer will type this URL, hit it, and somehow they will get the functionality that they want. This is as opposed to the traditional model in which you bundle together a bunch of resources, bytes, images, whatever you need. You go and you deploy it on the on-premise environment of your customer. So that's a relatively recent business model. That's not an architecture. It's a business model, as you will see through the session. Let's say that that is the end result. How you achieve that result, well, it's kind of up to you. The purpose of this session is to show you that if you use the Windows Azure platform, actually it's easier to write those kind of solutions. However, I cannot claim that it is easy, because of course that depends by the business scenario that you're trying to implement. And it can actually be pretty hard, because there are many things that you need to think about for putting this stuff together. However, the good news is that now that you have platform as a service, and in general the cloud platform, creating these applications is no longer prohibitively hard. And we'll see that 10 years ago, writing something like that would have been maddeningly hard. And so I'm going to introduce you to the idea. Software as a service, platform as a service, or these kind of buzzwords, so that we sacrifice a few slides to the altar of the marketing gods. And somebody please tweet this, because I will never remember this sentence. Like, it wasn't prepared, it just came out like this. And then, since it's kind of hard to be concrete when we talk architecture, and it's even harder when we talk business model, I'm going to spend most of my time describing one big, very complete end-to-end example which we created for demonstrating the principles that I'm going to mention here. Did any of you ever played with this Fabricam shipping thing? One, two, three, four. So during this, we spend most of the time exploring this sample, trying to understand why we made certain choices, and especially the thing that I really want to highlight are the trade-offs, the decisions that we had to make, so that you may not end up exactly in the two extremes that we are implementing in the sample, but it's important that you understand that there is this gamut which is available to you, and you can choose wherever you are in there. Also, the other thing I want to make sure is that you know that if you need to perform a certain function, there is already code for that. So if it's something that the sample is already doing, you can download the source code, select, Control-C, move to the other windows, Control-V, Shift-Control-B, Done. Almost, but you catch my drift. Okay, so as I like to say here, I cannot pronounce this thing, otherwise people will think that I'm swearing. But let's try to understand in more in practical terms what does it mean to create a software as a service solution. Let's say that you have this great idea of one business that can actually be delivered as a service. Not every functionality can be delivered as a service, but certain are really perfect for it. Think CRM, think email and similar. So perhaps you have your great idea and you want to make this available as a service. So you have to fill the gap between user, which opens a browser, types the address and hit enter, and the functionality. What do you have to implement? Well, if this terrain is the baseline, what are the things that you need to worry about? Let's say you start from scratch and then you put all these blocks, one on top of the other, and on top, finally, you have your solution. Those are all things that if you start absolutely from scratch, you have to worry about. Starting from literally the networking, the fact that there is an address and you're listening, well, that means that you have a networking infrastructure, that you have your DNS, that you own registered your domain, all these kind of things. On top of this, you have to manage storage. And with it, I mean literally the hardware, like the RAID disks, the stuff on top of that. You have to buy them. You have to make sure that they remain in good health. And with that, the servers, which maintain them. And of course, even details like the temperature of a room is important, because when you have a bunch of servers, you need to have air conditioning. You have to have all the various anti-fire things. Like having a data center is no small task. And then once you got that, you need to add a further layer, which is the virtualization, meaning that you have now all those cores, but you cannot afford to be limited by the hardware. Like if you want to distribute your load here and there, you need to virtualize. Otherwise, the chunks that you can deal with are only the hardware, and that doesn't work. On top of this, of course, maintaining all those machines is completely on your back. That's to say that comes Patch Tuesday, and nobody but you will go and install those things. And if you don't, when a zero-day vulnerability comes out and people comes and breaks your entire system, there is no kind way of saying that. You are screwed. So my English coprocessor is starting to go haywire. But again, end of a long week. Dealing with an operating system is, of course, big task. And is there any system administrator among you guys? Come on. Don't be shy. I knew there was somebody. Okay. Did you follow the 12 steps for getting out of it? Okay, so more or less, then I am the same. Like I stay away from infrastructure as much as I can. And so all these things are things that we, over here, we don't have to deal with that. But imagine that you build your own business and then you cannot go to your admin colleague, was where would be all things that you have to deal with. On top of all these, there is more. There is the middleware. Middleware means, for example, the software that you use for creating a cluster. You have databases around, you want to keep them available, you want to have some kind of, scalability, performance, and similar. You've got to install a cluster. And it's not just for the database, but it's for everything else. So NLBs and friends. On top of that, you need a runtime. That's to say, something that will execute your stuff. So classic examples would be .NET, other would be Java, and various others that are, functionally in the same level. And then finally, once you have gone through all these, you can finally start doing things that are specific to your application. That's to say, the data entities that you're playing with and the applications themselves. So think of all the stuff that you had to put together. And if you were bored during this list, just by hearing that, think what it would mean to actually do that. Well, luckily, we are now in modern times, hence all this is not necessarily no longer the case. So let's enter our first buzzword. YAS. YAS stands for? Ah, beautiful. Thank you for answering immediately. I expected to have to go like this until it falls off. And instead, you are still reactive despite the time. Good. Infrastructure as a service. In practice, what does that mean? It means that if you have a very big hammer, I don't know if you guys like Thor, like I'm looking forward to go back home so I can go with my wife to see this Thor movie. But anyway, if you have this big hammer and you hit this stack pretty hard, what happens is that this guy, oops, partly gets buried. Let's say that there are aspects that before the infrastructure as a service you had to worry about, such as the operating system, the air conditioning of the room of servers, that now are no longer your concern because your provider, your vendor, will actually take care of all that stuff. However, you still have to take care of all the stuff which is still in the surface. For example, the operating system. For example, putting stuff together. Now, please don't get this in the wrong way. If that thing would have happened to our servers, I would be bringing this episode up anyway. But last week, there was a major outage of last week or was this week? Last week, thank you. There was a major outage of one cloud platform. And this outage wasn't, for what I understood, not widespread. It was just in certain areas, certain data centers. Now, solutions built on top of that thing, they had the widespread failures as well. And now, one of the reasons is that those solutions were using these as infrastructure. That's to say that there was still a layer that you, as a solution developer, have to worry about, which is where the machines are actually living, which I would say failed. Failed because there was one data center that went down, and since the concept of data center was not transparent to those solutions, when that went down, there was no automatic shuffling mechanism that moved the stuff to the data centers that were still working. The solutions, which took all those things into account, survived. The others went down and stood down until that specific data center came up. Now, this is a side effect of having to take this into account, because now if we move to the next buzzword, which is the one that we like, which is PaaS, then that means that we hit this thing even harder, and we end up in here, actually even lower. With platform as a service, we strive to hide as much of the implementation details as possible. In other words, we try to actually give you an operating system which decouples you from knowing the details of the resources that you are using, and we just give you the functionality. You can iterate the same concept as the classic operating systems, in which you have this high-level functionality for example, printing something, but you don't know the details of a printer. You just write some high-level function, and something in these various layers make this happen. You don't need to know the details. Operating systems started for wrapping the iron of the machines. Now, we are beyond that. We don't. When you write a solution which needs to scale, is a service, and similar, thinking in terms of machines forces you to add intelligence on top of that for configuring clusters, managing availability, and similar. If instead we give you an operating system which takes care of all that stuff and only offers you pure capability, as pure as possible, then you don't need to worry about this. If I just give you a place where you can run your code without you having any knowledge of the fact that that place is actually a machine with an operating system, with needs for patching and similar, then you don't have to worry about all this. Because if something fails at the operating system layer, then it will be a matter of the operating system moving stuff around. Like, you will not see that. It's not that it's impossible to do it with infrastructure as a service. It's that it requires you to be an expert. You can, again, think of a ride of disks in which there is the system which manages the ride, which will decide from where to read the stuff, and if one disk fails, somehow avoid that disk. Now move all these for the entire cloud. Platform as a service is basically an operating system for a data center. That's what it is. And of course, the higher the level of abstraction, the easier it is to do things. So, problem solved? Maybe. Let's see. Let's say that we have some software developer, this could be you, could be somebody that you know, who already have existing intellectual property, one application, something that already works, already brings livelihood, and is designed to be on-premises. So old model, current model, pre-cloud, non-software as a service. And let's say that this person wants to move to a subscription model because, you know, there are advantages to be made. So here we have our little Windows Azure Cloud. And then here you can imagine what our marketing people would tell the guy. Hey, come on, jump. The water is fine. And this guy, of course, thinks a bit about it. Because it's true that with a platform as a service, you don't have to worry about all those things. But making one application available as a subscription is not just making things work from the technical perspective. It includes a number of things, such as, for example, here I have my existing solution. I invested in that. I spent money, and my people know how to operate it, how to deploy it, how to customize it. How can I move to this new model and still maintain as much as I can of that intellectual property? And here, the fact that you are using PaaS or not, perhaps PaaS will make it easier. In fact, it does. But it's not immediate, the link between one thing and the other. And of course, there are many, many other things, such as, for example, before I knew my customer very well because I had to go into their home and install my application. Also, that meant that I could customize, do all these kind of things. Now, when you move in a system as a service, just like it's easy for the customer to consume this thing, just the URL, then it should also be easier to sign up. Let's say that you should give them a way to onboard themselves as easily as possible. Because, of course, the lower the bar, the more customers come, the more money, the longer the vacation that you have in farther places. So, awesome. But those are all things that somebody who has an on-premises background may have a harder time wrap their head around. And then, of course, there are many other interesting things, such as how do I actually create new applications on the fly? Because before, what the application is trivial. I go to the customer and I do a deployment. That is my application. Now I have a service, it's just one URL, or URL plus various sub-URLs. What does it mean to create one application? And how do I keep my customers separated? Before, they are separated by the sheer position, like one intranet, another intranet, and nothing in between. Now they are all potentially in the same place. How do I make sure that customer A cannot peek in the business of customer B? And especially, how can I convince them that this won't happen? And of course, which leads to the part of authentication, authorization, all these kind of things. Actually, I should have added at the very beginning that you may know me for my work for identity and similar. This session is largely not about identity. Then, yes, it's correct to have that reaction because I can't help. I will speak about identity, but at least in theory, that shouldn't be the case. Let's say that identity is, of course, a very important part of the solution, but it's not the entire point. So don't be surprised if I blabber about this and it has nothing to do with identity. And of course, here, there's the biggest concern of all, which is how do I get the money? When you go and you do the deployment, actually, like you have a very direct relationship. Here, again, It's like very occasional partners and don't get these in the wrong way. Meaning that they have to come up, they sign up, and somehow as a part of this, I need to gather the money for, gather the mean for actually charging these people. Otherwise, it's all useless. Well, we wanted to make sure that we help you to understand how to use the Windows Azure platform for solving this kind of problems. But before I go further, are there any of you that are already developing and maintaining software as a service solutions?
Developing?
Okay, perfect. Four. And how many of you think that they'll do it in the near medium future? Great. Everybody else, you like my accent, basically. And usually it's not the case, but I see no other explanation. Okay, I'll assume that you are still interested from the, I don't know, intellectual standpoint to the point. But anyway, we wanted to really give you guidance that is rooted in experience rather than just doing a classic, here are the features and figure it out. So we actually walked a few miles in your shoes. We took one demo, so existing intellectual property that you already owned, which was designed to be used as a service. This was a demo that already had various layers. Let's say that we started it in 2008 for PDC, and then we used it for keynotes and various different places. We added features. So this was as realistic as we can get in terms of existing IP. And it was definitely designed to run on IIS. And we wanted to see what happens if we take this thing and we want to move it to the cloud. Now, what this demo does is almost irrelevant. This is one application that you can use for sending packages. So it's a portal. You go through this portal by describing what you want to send, and the net result is one label which you put on the package and you send it. But all the solution that we are devising is generic. Let's say that you should be able to apply this regardless of the service that you are offering, or at least that was the intention. And so we went through this exercise. It was interesting. And so the result is something that we wanted you to be able to experience this as easily as possible. So there is a live instance that you can go and play with without installing anything on your machine. And especially there is the code, 58,000 line of it, which is why you see white in various places here, and which actually implements various tasks that are useful in the context of creating software as a service, and that typically are not coming out of a box. So for example, let's say that you want to implement an email verification system in which you accept users only if they prove that they are actually able to access a certain email box. Not that hard, but you have to write it. And here, instead, you can just go and grab the code. Or let's say that you want to use PayPal for charging users. Again, here, there is something that you can take advantage of, that because we made the integration with those guys. Also, another thing which does not directly touch you, at least in this iteration, but one of the reasons was that we wanted something for give feedback to the product team. Like, you may think that Microsoft Corporation is this Borg cube in which there is the Borg queen that shuffles all the thoughts of everybody, and we always know about everything else going on the company, but let me tell you that is absolutely not the case. Let's say that I come from the evangelism team, which works very, very closely to some product teams, but we are different teams. So the main advantage that I have in respect to you guys is that I know where these people live. So we can literally wait for them outside of their door and say, oh, come, let's go grab a coffee and I'll tell you about the issue I have with your features, which is something that you guys cannot do. But anyway, having a piece of code which works or doesn't work really makes the conversation easier, or it brings it down to earth. So we did it also for that reason. And without further ado, this is not really a demo, but just for showing you what we are talking about. If you go to this address, you'll find a bit of introduction to the environment. a video where I give more or less this similar intro. And then you have three ways of interacting with the service. Here there is a link to the live demo, which of course runs on Windows Azure, and we'll explore that in details. Then we have the full source code package, which contains all the source code, and also it contains it modified in a way that you can also run it locally. Of course, the code which is designed to run on Windows Azure has various things that wouldn't work locally, like, for example, various SQL Azure databases and similar. But we did the one version which runs on SQL Express, runs on the Dev Fabric simulation environment, so that you can put the breakpoints and see how that works. But we also give you the scripts if you wanted to understand how we did the true deployment. And then here we have yet another package, which is for testing one specific part of a scenario, which is the enterprise part, in which the customer of this demo is supposed to be an enterprise and have infrastructure, like the Active Directory and similar. But not every developer has access to an Active Directory to play with. And so we created a couple of utilities that you can use for simulating that. And we'll see how it works slightly later. So here, let's go to the demo. OK. Now, in order to transform our system from our on-premise solution to a solution which works as a service, we basically had to come out with one pattern. Now, this pattern is not the only possible pattern. It is the one that worked for us. So take it with a grain of salt. Let's say that if this works for you as well, awesome. Otherwise, just see it as one example of how you can approach the problem. Remember, we started from our little application, which was substantially ASP.NET and a database. That was our starting point. So code and a script for creating a database. Now let's put them in a corner for a moment. In our new system, since we want to do something as a service, the very heart of a system is our database of subscriptions. One subscription is what causes you to create one new application instance. So that's the most important thing in the entire system. It's what brings you money. It's the thing that around which everything else revolves. And it's the thing that describes your customer and describes also what they want from your application. So this is just a database, but it's absolutely central to everything else. Then, since we are talking about platform as a service, here you have a set of building blocks. Building blocks that are compute capabilities, places where you can run code, services that you can start so that you will execute things, storage accounts so that you can use NoSQL storage for putting stuff in there, SQL accounts like relational databases that are in the cloud and that are automatically replicated and similar. Connectivity. I don't know if you went to some session from Clemens or Christian Bayer. In a fabric, you have all those high-level capabilities for connectivity. Those are all Lego building blocks that you can use and you can rearrange for creating on the fly what one subscription requires you to create. And in this context, your existing IP becomes part of this set of building blocks. So here you have your bits. You'll derive something from those which will do the job. And the same goes for your database. Now this template can be a bit confusing, so let me cover those two bubbles. And then what else do you need here? Of course, job is not done. You need something which reads the subscriptions or whatever other info that is in the system and actually makes something happen. And this thing is called, in our context, a provisioning engine. You can call it whatever. It's just a long-running process which is capable of reading whatever is in one subscription and saying, OK, this customer wants a website with a blue background and these many storage accounts and the federation with this other endpoint. And takes all these blocks, calls the various APIs, and makes stuff happen. And last thing, you need a way to actually drive this process. So typically, you need a UI engine which can present your administrators, the people that run this solution, with some administrative UI. You also need to create something for your users, of your potential users, such as, for example, the UI that you use for creating this subscription. So there, you need a UI engine. So three things, assuming that you go on top of a platform as a service. Subscription database, provisioning engine, generic UI. That's the theory. Now, let's see things in practice in terms of Windows Azure. Now, of course, I cannot make intros of everything because otherwise I'd be able to cover half of what I needed to cover. I assume that all you guys know what is a web role. Yes. Hands? Can I see the hands? Thank you. Worker role. Excellent. Not everybody. Okay. For this one, I'll do a bit of an intro. But in general, unfortunately, this thing is really, how to say, advanced. So I cannot also intro all the concepts. So I apologize for the people that are not familiar with Windows Azure. But unfortunately, for this session, it's kind of a prerequisite. And I think that in the abstract, it mentioned, or at least it implied that. And I see people nodding, so I feel much better. Thank you. So here we have to give concrete implementation to those entities. And let's start with the subscriptions. Actually, I should carry on also those two guys, my existing intellectual property, which is here. And here, the meaning of those should be fairly obvious. The green area will be things that you get from the App Fabric, this area in the center, Windows Azure, and this thing which kind of compete for attention with DevDays is SQL Azure, and all the things that I'll put in here are things that live in Windows in SQL Azure. The blue parts are neutral stuff where I will do my little drawings. So for the subscription, which is the center of everything, we have to create one storage account. Well, we have. We decided to use a storage account. Since this is not in the least relational, we can use the storage in Windows Azure. And there, we keep our subscriptions. And since it's a storage, here we keep also the bits, literally the source code. So this is not something which is running. This is just like a bunch of files which represent our generic solution, which are like our starting solution, and the scripts for creating the database. So this is our static area. Then we need somewhere to run the provisioning engine. And for this, we are going to use a worker role. A worker role is simply a compute project without UI. This is a place where I can run code without requiring it to have a UI. So very straightforward. This is the classic backend batch processor. This is a long-running process in which we have our provisioning engine. And here I'm omitting various practical details, like, for example, the fact that we are using queues for communicating between various areas. If you are interested in the details after the session, you can ask me if we'll still be in working conditions. And then for the UI, of course, we will use a web role. A web role is just like a worker role, but it has a web UI, as easy as that. So this is our generic solution. Then we have a couple of other elements. We have one namespace in the access control service, which we use for all our authentication needs. So we have this as a container. And then every time you need to onboard somebody, depending on the flavor of the onboarding, we'll use a different feature. SQL Azure, well, we do have something to begin with. So this is the structure of our solution. Again, your mileage may vary. You may find that your solution requires something different, but we have seen that pretty much any service that we wanted to create can be created using this system. In Fabric and Shipping, we have two levels of subscriptions. Those two levels of the subscription represent different points in the space of possible solutions and trade-offs in Windows Azure. One of these points is the enterprise subscription. It is one subscription which has the feature of allowing you to reuse as much intellectual property as possible. That's to say that basically it enables you to take your existing IP, even if it was designed to be monotenant and to be deployed on premises, and it allows you to transform it into a service. Let's say something that the user will see as there is a URL and I have access to that. So something that was basically not possible before the cloud. On the other side, and the reason for which is enterprise, we call this enterprise, is because it will cost you. Let's say the fact that you can do this, pull out this trick, means that you have to put some money on the table. On the other side of the trade-off, there is a situation in which instead you reuse as much resources as possible. So it's a very, how to say, inexpensive solution. However, this requires you to modify your solution so that it becomes multi-tenant. So you actually have to go in the code and change it. And of course, since this is, like to say, less costly, we call this small business. But we are basically just building the scenario. In reality, for you, you may be using that solution simply because it works for your needs, and your customers are huge corporations. So don't get put off by the fact that in this scenario we are putting labels. It's simply for being able to tell the story, because otherwise it gets a bit dry. And the main difference between those two guys is that when I build an enterprise subscription, and we'll see in a moment what that means, basically what happens is that the system will create a brand new hosted service, for example this, and it will deploy to this, brand new hosted service a completely independent version, customized version of the application. So the more customers you have, the more of those hosted services you will start. Whereas, if instead you go for the small business, what we have is an existing instance, which is a part of the initial setup of Fabric and Shipping, which contains this modified version of the application, which is actually capable of handling multiple tenants. In both cases, we create completely independent SQL Azure databases, just because we could. Let's say that in traditional systems, you are all shared or all exclusive. Instead of here, we just wanted to make the point that you don't really have to choose. You can easily pick intermediate solution and mix and match. Again, before the cloud, this would have been extremely hard. So that's the high-level idea. Questions so far? Are you still with me? You know that I don't have an ego. If you are tired and you think that this is not useful, by all means, I will not feel bad. So never mind about this. Okay, so let's actually take a look at one enterprise subscription, and then we'll visit the architecture in slightly more details. So let us come here, and let's choose enterprise. Word of warning. Those two numbers have been extracted completely randomly. So please do not think that these things are any representation at all of what running this stuff would actually cost. I just had to put numbers here because basically, my boss told me, oh, so we should put numbers there because it's more realistic, okay? But those are random, so don't keep me accountable for that. So let's say that I want to, I am a potential enterprise customer and I want to create for my company one instance of this software as a service application so that my employee can send the packages until they are blue in the face. So I click on choose enterprise and the first thing that happens is that since for creating this instance I will have to share details about my company, well, I want to secure the interaction so that if there is the occasional intern that is sniffing the traffic, sorry, no bonus. And what you see in here is already usage of a platform as a service. We are using the access control service for implementing this functionality. And despite that, here the experience is exactly the one that I want. So it's completely transparent, but I don't have to worry about the practical details of maintaining credentials and similar. So good. Let's choose one live ID. Which one should I use? Let's use this one. Oh, which password do I have here? That's the one I use for developing for Windows Phone 7. And slowly, slowly, the poor electrons go all the way on the other side of the planet.
Actually, I think it's not
yellow. Really? But it's green. So that means that I hit something somewhere. But it was useful. Thank you. Slowly, slowly. Ah, and we are here. So what you see here is a lot of text because I'm paranoid. And so I tell you, don't put anything personal here. This is just a test. Don't take a dependency on that. Like, it's just for my peace of mind. It, of course, it's probably useless because, again, I'm not a lawyer, so who knows what I wrote. But anyway, you can ignore this for all practical purposes. Now, of course, when you, if you want to use it, please read it. And so here you see our generic UI engine at work. We provided the list of steps, the things that we needed to gather for creating this special flavor of subscription, which is the enterprise one. And then our engine is actually gathering all these. And all those steps are actually not doing almost any postbacks. We are just gathering everything, and at the end, we'll just send everything at once. So here I'm asked the things like company name and similar. The only thing that I believe it's interesting in this context is this. Here I'm exposing one capability of Windows Azure, which is choosing where your stuff will run. But again, I'm not forcing you to go to the portal and deal with all the complexity there, which is not that complex. But anyway, I'm just a customer. I want to ship packages, and I want to learn about Windows Azure. And this thing is just surfacing this capability, which again, great platform as a service play. The question is if I can choose a specific country. There we expose where the data center is, but it won't get more granular. Then there is this new feature that we have, which is the Traffic Manager, which is basically a software NLB, where in Windows Azure you can decide where your traffic is routed, and there you have better control of which countries you'd go through.
Can you choose multiple
regions? The question is, can you choose multiple regions? Not in this specific example. In general, you can. Like, for example, then we'll see in the small business case where I have the multi-tenant application, I actually have one copy running for every region. So that here, when you choose one, you pick one or the other, it wouldn't cost me much to expose these as checkboxes so that when you put a checkbox, like your stuff gets deployed in there. So since we are doing enterprise, I'm assuming that the customer, let's say me in this moment, I'm actually, I have available one infrastructure which I can use for projecting my organizational information in the context of this transaction. And so I won't go into the details. You know that I'd like to, but I won't. But here, substantially, all I needed to do is upload one description of my Active Directory Federation services, and that description will be used by my provisioning engine to establish a single sign-on relationship with my system back, which is pretty handy. So let's do that. So here I will pick metadata of one test case. Actually, well, what should I pick? Well, I'll pick this one. Okay. So this is one of a few postbacks that we do, actually not even postbacks. We call a validation service to see that we are not using a metadata which is already used somewhere, and it's not the case. So here you have another example of using the platform. What we are doing behind the scenes is using claims-based identity, which is this very powerful way of managing authorization in a fine-grained fashion. However, the customer may know nothing about it and care even less. It's beyond me how somebody may not care about the claims-based identity, but I'm being told that occasionally it happens. And so here what we are doing, we are exposing the business capability of this application, which substantially is exposing three roles, which represent things that you can do for this app. And then we are offering this very simple way of defining what the customer wants to happen. For example, I may want everybody to be a shipping creator, everybody to be a manager, but nobody to be an administrator. In general, like we try to simplify as much as possible. If the user now just goes forward, we'll transform these into claims mapping and all these things that in the end will make this happen, but without shoving in the face of a user that complexity. Now, if the user really want to, then it's a different matter. If they decided that they wanted to do this advanced thing, then we do expose this concept of claims in which I can do things like creating explicit mappings, in which I could, for example, pick the group information and say that all the domain users are, in fact, the shipping creators. And then I just gave to all my authenticated users the capability of creating shipments. This list of claims, of course, comes from a metadata. So every customer will see their own attributes. If I'd be coming from a company from South Korea, here I would probably see things that right now I cannot pronounce. So, completely personalized. And of course, this goes also for other information. The advantage of using a claims-based identity is that I don't have to provision users. Since for shipping stuff, I need to have a sender information, I'm just defining how to map from the attributes that I receive during the single sign-on to the information that I need to do for making the shipment happen, and that's it. Again, once again, here, I'm doing the mapping automatically because the name of the claims are a very good match to what I need, but it may not be the case. At that point, I may have to explicitly go and pick stuff up. Okay, let me just hit next. So in the end here, we gathered all the info that we need for creating a brand new instance of this portal. And we have the PayPal integration, but I'll show it later if we have time. Once I hit subscribe, what happens is that the system gets all these, packages it, and sends it to the subscriptions. And at this point, our provisioning engine will start trying to provision, as the name implies. And in fact, here, since this is a sample, we are actually showing the various phases, and we are at the very beginning, and those are all the things that need to happen. Since this would take some time, because that would require provisioning a brand new hosted service, what we have is that I already have one pre-provisioned instance of an enterprise customer, and I can just show you how it works. At the same time, I can also show you this enterprise companion thing, which I mentioned before. So I don't assume that you guys have this spare Active Directory to play with for playing with this. So if you download this Enterprise Edition companion, you get one simulator of Active Directory, and you get also a couple of clients that you can use for exploring more complicated scenarios. So all I needed to do here is to go to the folder of my companion. In here, I have the address of my pre-provisioned instance of enterprise customer, and then I just needed to start the simulation environment, which, bless you, which pretends to be Active Directory. Do not use these anywhere near a production system. This is very, very, very insecure. Very handy, but very insecure. As usual, if you cover your feet, your shoulders are out. If you cover your shoulders, you'll be called in with feet. You can't have both. But anyway, now we have this little Active Directory which is running, and I can show you that here there are the list of values that I will send once the user tries to sign in. And we'll have a chance to see how the customer can right away basically do single sign-on in this new instance. Of course, here, certificates for cloudapp.net are only awarded to Microsoft people. I didn't want to make you feel bad, so I didn't get any, I didn't show off that I can do it, and so we are getting the warning. That certificate is a self-signed certificate. And here the system will bounce me to the local identity provider, and once authenticated, it will bounce me back, and I will be in my brand new instance. Now, this is not exactly the same, but if we would have gone through the process, this would be the same. So, believe it or not, the instance that is running here is not a multi-tenant instance. This is exactly the same mono-tenant code which I created when I was targeting on-premises. This is possible only because of our platform as a service approach. In fact, let's take a look to that. So here we have the system that we started with. And now let's see behind the scenes what happened. Here there's our new customer with its own directory. Let's say that the customer came here, went through the provisioning, and hit on the subscribe. And here you have one administrator. Of course, administrator laid back, which receives one notification which says, hey, guess what? We have a new enterprise customer. And here there are the details of a subscription. And now, for a current, I was going to say feature, and then I said, but perhaps they will feel it's a limitation. And then I thought, no, because if I say limitation, there is the recording. So feature of Windows Azure, which does not allow you to create a hosted service from scratch using APIs. This may change in the future, but right now, there are good reasons for preventing you from doing that. However, in this context, we needed to create a new instance. So we send the notification to the administrator, and the administrator goes in the Windows Azure portal and creates a new hosted service. Creates a new hosted service using a specific name which we tell them, a name which is derived from the information that we gathered from our customer during the provisioning. And now the administrator is out of the picture, literally. And our provisioning engine, after it sends that notification, starts polling for a service with that name to be actually up. As soon as it finds it, it goes ahead, grabs our bits of our solution, the solution that we already had on-premises. It customizes it using whatever information the user provided during the onboarding process. In this case, for example, which Active Directory we should federate with, or where it should be deployed, all these kind of things. And we literally change the code using other code, but just like our people would have taken the bits and customized the deployment at the customer. So I'm reusing not only the bits, but also the know-how about my solution. And once I have it, I'll actually use CSPAC, which is a utility of a platform, for deploying it in this new service. At the same time, I will do the same with SQL Azure. Let's say that I will just use the same mechanism for grabbing my script of a database, create this database customized specifically for this customer. And at this point, well, it's not very colorful, whoop, slightly more visible. Okay. And then after all this is done, I will send a mail to the customer saying, guess what? Your new instance is ready. And so the customer now will follow customer or anybody from that Active Directory, will hit the application. Oops, as usual, I forgot the most important thing, which is as a part of the solution, we also add in the access control service all the things that we needed to know for authenticating this user, for the users from the directory, for making all the various mappings which we decided. We upload the certificates which we generated on the fly for signing, for encrypting for this specific customer so that it's completely separated also at the cryptographic level from everybody else. And so here when I hit my application, I'm not authenticated. I get redirected to the specific endpoint that I created. Here I'm not authenticated, but the system knows where I should go for authenticating. I come here, I get a token, I send the token back. This token gets transformed according to the rules that I decided during the sign up. And then finally, I get access to my app. Simple as that. So literally from scratch, I created that app. Now let's add another customer. Our business is expanding. We have another customer, different color, but the story is the same. They go through the onboarding. Imagine the admin. I'm not going to rewrite him. And now here we'll have pretty much the same process. We'll create a new hosted service. Once this hosted service is up and running, we'll create a customized version of the app, this time yellow. We'll do the same with this guy. Let me just copy it, which is faster, and change the color of the database. And now this history repeats itself. Let's say that we'll send to the customer a notification that their instance is ready. Let me use yellow so that we see the difference. Oops, I knew that it would be too crowded. Okay, and so here there's the various bounce and back that you know. As you can see, those two instances are completely isolated from each other. This service lives a completely parallel life to this one. And those two instances are exactly like the instances that you would have done on premises. So from the user perspective, this is software as a service, but this thing is not a multi-tenant application because this is a monotenant application and another monotenant application. It is just for the fact that I'm using platform as a service that I have as building blocks both things so that I can assemble a solution on the fly. That's pretty cool because one of the main issues that we hear from people saying, oh, I'm moving to the cloud, is exactly this, that they have existing investments, they are not ready to throw it away. So with this, you can just do that. Yes, sir? The observation is if you find a bug in your original code, then you have a lot of instances and you have to fix it everywhere. That's a very fair observation, absolutely, yes. And that's one part of a trade-off. Let's say that if you have a multi-tenant app, then it's one instance and you just work on that. That's great. Here, that's how to say a specific decision when you are optimizing for reusing what you have. Of course, if what you have changes, then probably that's not the right optimization to do. And in fact, that provides a very good segue for the next subscription level. But first, let's just summarize the enterprise trade-offs. Here we have a completely isolated system. And here I'm using this schema, this naming schema. However, in a real application, you would use vanity URLs. Let's say that you'd have CNAME mapping, A records, and similar, because of course you want to be able to obtain a certificate. So this is just for giving you a feeling of a difference of this approach versus the next one, which instead uses a sub URL. Then you have these exclusive use, which means that if a customer is huge, you can add as many instances just for them as you like. So you have a complete control of all the various knobs. And also in terms of maintaining isolation between customers, you can't do better than that. They are completely different. And then you can reuse whatever you have, and at this point it's clear. And for bank billing, if you want to subsidize your use of the infrastructure, it's very clear what you have to charge the customer for, because you have complete visibility on whatever they are doing. Whereas when you have a multi-tenant application, well, you need to take into account the usage at the application level, because at the infrastructure level, it's all the same app. So it's harder to tell which tenant is doing what. And federated SSO, of course, it's absolutely awesome. Now, this is a simplified version of a provisioning flow for the enterprise provisioning. It's here for your reference, because believe it or not, in the community, there's people that really like to dig into the details of how this works. And so here we have a schema. Of course, I'm not inflicting on you now going step by step, but it's interesting to know that we have it. Now let's take a very quick look to the small business subscription. So let me close this entire thing. I said close. Okay. Now let's go back to the subscription. And this time let's choose the smaller box. And let's see what happens. Let's sign in with a different user. Now I will be Adam. And for the ones who came this morning to the introduction to the identity in the cloud, you already saw this, but you didn't know what happened behind the scenes. So you'll see it with new eyes. So here we have our usual engine. As you can see, it's different because our description of a subscription type is different. So we customized everything. Actually, we just customized step number 3 and we got rid of some of the intermediate steps because this one is exactly the same as before. So let's add a few random details. So here I assume that my customer, let's say me, I'm now playing the part of a potential customer, is a small business app, a small business, or in general, they don't have a directory. It could be an enormous business. It could be a franchise which sells burgers. You choose the one that you prefer. And my employees may be guys from college that work just in the summer and then they go. So they're not a small business, I'm an enormous business. But since there is such a churn, it doesn't make sense for me to add in the Active Directory those employees. So I may actually use their credentials from Live ID, Facebook, and similar. So all I need to know here is to provision one entry for that user in my system. And then for authenticating them, I can just send an activation mail, something that verifies that their email address is actually the one from my employee. And then they can self-provision whatever account they want to use so that I don't have to maintain a username and password, and they don't have to create a new account. So here, let me add a couple of values. Yep. Okay, so now I have two users, one from Live and the other from Gmail. And here, let me see, I have 10 minutes, so let's vote. Who wants to see the integration with PayPal? 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, I can show it after, because just for, I have to respect the tally. So once I hit subscribe, I'm going to see the same screen, congratulations. And the workflow is much shorter. I have less things to do for the small business account. And those things do not require any smoking administrator. Like for the nature of this infrastructure, this subscription, I can actually automate the entire thing. And in fact, here in 11 seconds, we created the new instance. And among the various things that we do for creating the instance, we notify the owner of the instance and we send those famous activation requests. So let's go and let's take a look from the point of view of the users that have been invited, what happens. So if I go to Hotmail, and I'm now Adam, here I got a couple of emails. One, because Adam is the administrator who went through the subscription. The other is because Adam added himself as a user. So let's just go to the activation mail, the one, please activate your account. Here I get my email in which I'm being informed that I can now access this new instance, which by the way is of a pattern, name of the app, name of the tenant, and then whatever action, of course, it's an MVC app. And in this MVC app, I have this ticket which ties back the record which I created with the roles, phone number, and similar to whatever Adam will choose as a method for authenticating. The fact that this was on live does not force me to use Live ID. If I want, I can use Facebook, Google, and similar. But if I'd use Facebook, you'd probably see inappropriate stuff. So let me stick with Live ID. So basically here the system used the Live ID token that I sent to match with the record, and now I am registered. And so now when I go to the address of instance, when I use Live ID, I am authenticated, which is great. And if now we quickly do the same for Gmail, Gmail, John, here I got more or less the same mail, of course, different ticket. I go through the same experience. I associate my Google account to this instance of Fabricam Shipping, and now I can access. Very straightforward. Yeah, sure. The question is, do both Microsoft and Google run a federation server for doing this thing? And the answer is, kind of. Meaning that the pages that you have seen where I made the authentication, both pages are exposing the capability of authentication for being consumed programmatically. I don't know if I would go all the way to call it federation, because when you say federation, you may perhaps mean something like formal protocols which allow you to enter in a full-fledged partnership and similar. Here, it exposes this capability to be consumed automatically. Thanks to the access control service in the middle, it doesn't really matter which protocol they are using as long as it is a redirect-based protocol. So they expose this capability, and the access control service makes it easy for my app to consume it. It has nothing to do with identity framework. Well, it's an, we should talk more about it. Like, let's say that there is no direct touch between Google and the application which is running Windows Identity Foundation. Your application, the instance of Fabricam Shipping, is using Windows Identity Foundation for validating the token which gets from the access control service. Then the access control service derives that token from a token that was obtained from Google. So there is a chain of events which links Google to the identity, the Windows Identity Foundation, but there is no contact. This doesn't mean that they may not be. Let's say that you can take the Identity Foundation, add support for OpenID, skip altogether access control, and talk with Google directly. But in this case, we don't do it. It would be silly, because a lot of work. So what happened here? Here we have a small business architecture in which we already have our multi-tenant application running. So this time we actually had to take the application and make it multi-tenant. If you go in the sample code, you can actually observe how we did it. We have both the source code for the application that we use in the enterprise, but also the source code that we use for this. And in this Visual Studio project, all the files that we didn't have to change are links. They are links to the files in the other solution. The files where we had to change something for making the application code multi-tenant instead are an explicit file. So it should be very easy for you to see the delta and understand how far you have to go for making something multi-tenant. And it's actually not that hard, but it does require some work. So let's go through the process of getting one customer, which go through the process here, goes through the onboarding. And then when it's the moment to actually provision, what happens is something much simpler than before. But the subscription, like the set of, records which represent the tenants, get a new entry which represents this new tenant. In other words, this application doesn't change in the list. I just add something here which represents a new possible action that I have, and this action in my MVC represents the tenant that I created according to what we created in here. So this doesn't change at all. It's simply that when I receive one request and that request contains in the action the new tenant, before it would have failed, because I would have seen that this guy would have been trying to get something that does not exist. Instead, now the function which retrieves all the customization that I need to do for making these to appear customized specifically for this customer will instead yield the results. The other thing that you get when you provision this is a brand new SQL database. Again, it is perfectly feasible to create a multi-tenant SQL Azure databases, and Mark in the very back can tell you everything about it since he's a SQL Azure king of the conference. But in this case, we chose to make things easy. Let's say that we show that we can actually still create completely isolated databases, even if on the compute side we are doing multi-tenancy. And there is also another reason. The user records are actually in the database, in the SQL Azure database, as opposed to the, let me change all those as red. Like here, I have only information about the tenant as the company. I don't have things like roles and similar. Those are actually in a new table that we have in here. And there, you may have sensitive information, of course, like not username and passwords because we don't use them. We rely on those guys. But anyway, personally identifiable information about the user. And now, since I have multiple ones, instead of worrying about keeping these things isolated, which is perfectly possible but requires you to know what you're doing, here I'm just brute force using my infrastructure for having completely separated databases. So if here I would add another yellow guy, which I don't have the time to do, but imagine it. It's like the same, here I would stack another yellow guy, here I would have this entire part, which is completely replicated. Nothing would change in here, I would simply have yet another action, which is now, again, a valid one. And that said, trade-offs. One application instance for everybody. That's great. I can really save a lot of money, because, of course, that's best use of resources. Here, I've just described why we did that. We can use social providers so that the barrier of entry is pretty low. We don't have to maintain username and password, which is always a good thing. We had to shove our hands in the code and change it. So now the trade-off is toward changing your IP rather than reusing it as is. And again, you be the judge on when it's the case to do one thing or the other. Better resource yield, but if you wanted to charge the user in a proportional way to your usage of a system, of course, that gets much harder. There are various other solutions that you can put in place. You can have bucketing. Let's say that especially if you use vanity URLs, you could have pre-provisioned buckets, and you know where customers are, so you can do better estimations. But let's not go there. Simplified provisioning, it is actually simpler than the other one, but still not too straightforward. So let me just summarize. Here we barely scratch the surface. This sample is enormous, and it does not even cover all the possible things that you can do for software as a service. But hopefully it makes things concrete instead of just giving you generic advice. One of the key points is you start from one application, which is like this monolithic thing that you go and you put on-premise, and you have to move your mindset to application factories. You build instances of these applications. How you do that depends on the nature of the application and what you want to do. There is a space of trade-offs. There are various dimensions. And it doesn't matter where you end up with a Windows Azure platform. You can pretty much choose where you want to be. What's important is that you understand the range, but within that bounding box, you can move wherever you want. And here we gave you some example. No platform as a service solution is complete, of course. Like, for example, when I wanted to add email notifications, I didn't have anything in the Windows Azure platform which does that. So I'm paying one external service for running the sample. So if you go through the sample and you subscribe and you get that email, just know that I personally paid from my budget a few cents for sending that email. So if you really hate me, go and get this all the time. And for payments, of course, we don't have anything so far, so I picked the phone, I called my friends at PayPal, and we put something together. And for this, you can do the same for a DNS service. If you want to do the DNS system, which automate this, you can do the same with a certification authority if you want to create certificates that are proper certificate and not just the self-signed certificate in here. Check out the code is enormous, but if you know where to look, it's really it contains a lot of useful stuff. And that said, my time is up, so I'm available for questions, of course, but I'll free the area so that those guys that are clearly tired can go home. Thank you for your patience.